Here we go. Wow, what a crazy morning it has been so far. I like that kind of thing. It kind of disrupts the normal little flow of things. Big spiders. Did you really think we could continue the morning with that? There's this huge spider crawling around. I mean, I just know. Anyway. So the angel Gabriel stepped in and there we go. Way to go, Gabriel. Good job. So as many of you know, in the fall of 2022, I had the privilege with Dr. Saref of coming and speaking at our first global staff gathering where we had Arab professors, Jewish professors, we had all those together in Budapest. And so I was in Budapest, fall of 2022. And basically my message, and I had three different sessions, but basically the bottom line of the message was, I get this question all the time through links and fellowships and our various 300 plus and growing fellowships with links across the country. I get this question all the time. You know, Jeff, when you start talking about all these prophecies and talk about the Old Testament, Jesus being the fulfillment, if these are so obvious, why don't the Jewish people believe in these? I mean, it's their book. I mean, if they're so obvious, is this just some kind of Gentile thing? And I said, what you just saw here in that worship song where we had, and by the way, that Arab brother, can he sing or what? I mean, amazing. And he's one of the most sweet, beautiful men. He was there at this global staff meeting. And just love him. And Thomas and just all the guys that, and many of them have been here with us. And when you see an Israeli and an Arab loving one another and laying down their lives for one another. You know, when Hamas attacked, there were 26 different, I may have alluded this to you before, but 26 different Arab pastors from around Israel that came and wept and cried and with our Israeli seminary pastors and all that to say, you know, this is not God's heart. And but through all of the pain and suffering, and there it has been immense, and we don't know what lies in front of us either, Jesus is made more. Well, he's lifted high in the middle of all of it. In the middle of the chaos, it's happening. But I get that question all the time. How did Israel miss Jesus? And so last week we started down this road and I talked to you a little bit about the inheritance. I'm going to go back to the parable, and then out of that we're going to draw several reasons of the next few weeks. But this morning is going to be specifically about the inheritance. And it's not just going to be a history lesson for you. I hope it's going to make you grow in your faith, number one. But number two, I hope it's going to be applicable to your life today, right here in the 21st century, and that we not make the same mistake that they made. And so Luke chapter 20, verse 9, let me read the parable again. And he began to tell the people this parable, Jesus speaking, a man planted a vineyard, and he rented it out. Remember that, rented it out to vine growers. And he went on a journey for a long time. At the harvest time, he sent a slave to the vine growers. And again, let's be clear, let's understand we're talking biblical slavery. We're not talking about the horrors of the American experiment that is just a dire satanic thing with chattel slavery. We're not talking about that. We're talking about something different. Although slavery is in the Bible, it's never lifted up. It's never God's heart at all. So when we read that, let's not superimpose our 21st century views of that onto this text. That's another message for another day, and it's a valuable message as well. But at harvest time, he sent a slave to the vine growers so that he would give him some of the produce of the vineyard. But the vine growers beat him and sent him away empty-handed. And he proceeded to send another slave, and they beat him and treated him shamefully. And he proceeded to send another and another and another, and they went away empty-handed. In verse 12, and he proceeded to send a third, and this one also they wounded and cast out, and the owner of the vineyard said, what shall I do? I will send my beloved son. Perhaps they will respect him. But when the vine growers saw him, they reasoned with one another, saying, this is the heir. Let us kill him. And this is appropriate for this morning. So that the inheritance will be ours. We get the inheritance, right? So they threw him out of the vineyard and they killed him. And what then will the owner of the vineyard do to them? He will come and destroy these vine growers and will give the vineyard to others. And when they heard it. Now notice, when we're talking in the Bible here, we're not talking about all the Jewish community. Israel as a nation generally rejected Jesus, but not everybody. Obviously, we have the New Testament. These were Jewish writers, with the possible exception of Luke and maybe one other. But the Jewish writers, the conduit has always been Israel was the chosen people, chosen for what? To be a light to the nations. And my challenge has been many times to you before. I said, well, look, if it's not Jesus, who? My Jewish friends, if not who? You have every people group, every tribe, tongue, everything will stand up and say, Jesus has transformed our lives. The conduit to that was the Jewish people, that God chose them, specifically the Messiah, but then by extension, the early apostles and the prophets and the forefathers. Even what we're reading this morning is a function of the Jewish conduit. They were given a holy task. And yet, as the prophets had seen, as we'll see in Psalm 118, Jesus quotes it right here. Isaiah 28, they're going to reject the cornerstone. They're going to trip over it. Isaiah 28, Psalm 118, they're going to miss the very thing they were looking for. And the Gentiles were going to find it, even though they weren't even looking for it. So they threw him out of the vineyard. They killed him. And when they heard this, they said, may it never be. And Jesus looked and said, what then is this that is written? The stone, quoting Psalm 118, the stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone. So this stone, whoever this stone is going to have to be rejected, but then will become the chief cornerstone. I want you to think about that for a minute. Whatever you know, the psalmist is saying, there's going to, you know, this cornerstone that, you know, really sets the place for the whole foundation. And then Paul would go on and say the cornerstone, and then the apostles and the prophets are the foundation. And then we, like living stones, are being built up into a dwelling place for God in the Spirit, as Peter had said. Living stones, we're living stones, being built on this foundation. But originally, the cornerstone had to be rejected by the very people that he came to save. Jesus saying, I came for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. They were going to have to reject him. But at the end of time, in the fullness of time, he's going to bring them back from across around the world. And I am unapologetic about this, even with my very dear friends who maybe disagree and think it's just incidental to God's plans. 700 times he said, I'm going to bring them back from around the world, from the east and the west, and I'm going to regather them in their land. And then I'm going to pour clean water on them, give them new spirit. All these pictures that's happening in your lifetime. Not just something way out there, maybe, you know, people, well, this happened 2,000 years ago. Can't we just get over this old mystical kind of, you know, mythological thing about talking snakes and donkeys and weird, you know, raising people from that? You can't believe in all that. Those were an ancient people that would have believed in anything. They were so gullible. No, in the 21st century, God is fulfilling things in epic proportions right in front of our very eyes, if we have eyes to see. Everyone who falls on that stone will be broken to pieces. But on whomever it falls, it will scatter him like dust. The scribes and the chief priests, not all the Jewish people, tried to lay hands on him that very hour. And they feared the people because they understood that he spoke this parable against him. So rather than having ears to hear and saying, this is that chief cornerstone, they were watching, sent spies, pretended to be righteous in order that they might catch him in some statement. They plotted so that they could deliver him to the rule and the authority of the governor. So that's the parable. So again, most people would just read over that. I've been asking the question in my own mind for the last 2 weeks, every day. Lord, what is it that they really wanted? I told you last week, Jesus is the ultimate agenda disruptor. They had an agenda, but they wanted something that was good. They wanted the inheritance. The inheritance is not a bad thing. They were not motivated in their ultimate vision was okay, because God is, and we're going to see this morning, he wants to give you an inheritance. He's into inheritance. He loves it. It wasn't a bad aspiration, but they were doing it on their agenda, not his. I'm going to take you this morning to a place, Acts chapter 26. Again, if you know a little bit of the history, I alluded to it last week. King Herod the Great was the one that really built up what we even still structures today from the very temple, the court area, to the Masada, to Caesarea, to Maritima, to all these different places. He was a building project kind of guy, but he died And then his kingdom was split among his sons, Archelaus, Antipas, Philip, and Philip Herod, and Philip. And then there was just all, and that's, they appear under sometimes just Herod, But Antipas, it was Herod Antipas that was responsible for John the Baptist and also ultimately Jesus' own death. But we're beyond those guys. Then it became Herod Agrippa I, and then finally Herod Agrippa II, who was the great-grandson of King Herod. And here's Paul's defense before Herod Agrippa. Okay, you ready? Acts chapter 26. We're going to read this because it's going to have really specific, I think give us specific insight as to what these religious Jews were wanting. Rather than, please, we're not here to vilify, to be anti-Semitic in any way. We're saying these religious Jews wanted the inheritance. That's what Jesus said. They killed the heir because they wanted the inheritance. But they were making some tragic miscalculations along the way. Okay, so let's read the story. And out of this defense before Agrippa, Paul, and this was, if you've ever been there, this would be north of Netanya, modern-day Tel Aviv. You go up the Mediterranean, and there's this place, and it's still there. I mean, the foundations of this place right on the Mediterranean, it's beautiful if you've ever been there. And there's the Pilate Stone and different things that we found archaeological to completely support this story, by the way. Right? I can't believe that. And now that Israel's become a nation again, we're uncovering everything, and it's validating everything that we've been reading in here forever. I mean, it's unbelievable. And I always thought, well, maybe that's when Jesus said, if you don't believe in me, even these rocks will cry out. I think the rocks are crying out today. Archaeologically, it's supporting everything that we know to be true. It's not somebody off in a cave just getting dreams and visions. These were real-life people living in a real place and walking out their relationship with the Creator of the universe in a very tangible and real way. Acts 26, verse 1. King Agrippa said to Paul, "You are permitted to speak for yourself." And then Paul stretched out his hand and proceeded to make his defense. Now catch this. Everybody with me? This is Paul making a defense. This is Jesus has long been gone now in terms of his ascension back to the right hand of the Father. Paul had his experience, and he's going to describe his experience, and through it we're going to see some of his aspirations as a religious Jew. And those still exist today. In regard to all the things of which I am being accused of by these Jewish leaders, I consider myself fortunate, King Agrippa, that I am about to make my defense before you today, especially because you are an expert, and he was, in all the customs and questions among the Jews. Therefore, I beg you to listen to me patiently. I'm going to beg you to listen to me patiently as well. So then, all the Jews know my manner of life from my youth up, which from the beginning was spent among my own nation and at Jerusalem. Since they have known about me for a long time, if they are willing to testify that I lived as a Pharisee, according to the strictest sect of our religion. In other words, we were the ones that were really trying. We were the special forces of God's chosen people, trying to bring our people back into alignment under the law so that we could what? Well, he's going to describe it. And now I am standing trial for that. Now catch this, for the hope of the promise made by God to our fathers. What drove Paul, in his own words, the promises that were made to our forefathers? Boy, we were strict about everything. It was just everything was, if there was a law, we were going to build a fence even further out and further out and further out because we were going to be the ones. We had an agenda. We were going to take on this inheritance. The promise to which our 12 tribes hope to attain. I wonder what those would have included. Well, we've all gone all the way back to Genesis 12. In your seed, all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed. It was going to be a global impact. It was going to be removal of oppressors. It was going to be their own freedom and autonomy. It was going to be eternal life, at least for the Pharisees, through the resurrection. It was going to be, in the end, if you want to say anything, it was going to be shalom for our people. This is what we wanted. These are the things that were promised to us. This is how I felt as a religious Jew. This is Paul speaking. At that time, his name would have been Saul. As they earnestly serve God night and day, and for this hope, O King, I am being accused by the Jews, for it is considered incredible among your people if Why is it considered incredible among you people if God does raise the dead? So then, I thought to myself that I had to do many things hostile to the name of Jesus of Nazareth. Okay, stop for a second. Now, this grabbed me as I was really pondering and meditating on this week. And I don't even know why I really went here. I was thinking in terms of the inheritance. But all of a sudden, it became very clear to me over the last several weeks. I said, this is it. In Paul's mind, that to garner the promises of the forefathers, to get his inheritance, it necessitated the killing of the Messiah, to kill the message of Jesus of Nazareth. So rather than Jesus of Nazareth's death, burial, and resurrection opening the door for not only the Jewish people, but the whole world to be reconciled to God, in my mind, I had to kill this message because I was still looking for the inheritance. Are you with me? That's what he just said. He says, and this is just what I did in Jerusalem. Not only did I lock up many of the saints in prison, he wouldn't have called them saints then, right? Having received authority from the chief priests, but also when they were being put to death, I cast my vote against them. He was there at the stoning of the very first Christian martyr, Stephen, in Acts 7, holding the very clothes of those who were winding up and hurling those stones and would ultimately be responsible for Stephen's death. And as I punished them often in all the synagogues, I tried to force them to blaspheme, and being furiously enraged at them, I kept pursuing them even to foreign cities. This sounds like to me the very attitude of the parable Jesus is telling. It was predicated on the fact that God's way out there, and they're going to miss one super important point, multiple points, but they're going to miss one super important point that we're going to discuss in a minute. But you do have to understand they were after the inheritance. He wanted the promises that were given to their forefathers, and in his mind, they had to kill the message of Jesus. Verse 12 says, so while so engaged as I was journeying to Damascus with the authority of the commission and the commission of the chief priests, at midday, O king, maybe this will be the day for you. Maybe you're watching on television or YouTube or something. Maybe this will be the day for you that at some point, midday, something like this would occur in your life. The veil somehow would be lifted for a moment, and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe. So this last weekend, Laura and I took a couple of days. We got away, hadn't done that in a long time, got away for a few days, and we did absolutely nothing. The only reason we walked is so that we could walk to get something to eat. And then we walked back, and we just stayed so close to the restaurants that we could just waddle back. Anyway, and we watched this movie, which I would have never, we did things that I would just never do. If I was at home, I would never do it. And we watched this thing called WALL-E. And I don't know if you've ever seen WALL-E, but it was an amazing animated film. And the basic premise is that, and I told Laura, I said, I went on this long diatribe of which she fell asleep three times as I was telling her. I said, this is the gospel message, this whole WALL-E. Right? And the planet had been, you know, it was a post-apocalyptic thing, this animation, and they had sent all the humans, and now they'd been, you know, thousands of years later, and they had sent all these humans away on this massive, what would be something like a cruise line that all the humans were, but it was a spaceship that had evacuated from Earth, and they were all plugged into these little videos, and the technology was so advanced, and they all just would kind of lay, and they would just get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and they didn't eat, they didn't exercise, they couldn't even walk. Their bone structure was decreased and everything. They couldn't walk. And they were just plugged into their little screens, and they just went about, and it was just standard thing. And then all of a sudden, something happened, and this captain finally got this vision. It was kind of like the captain was the Apostle Paul, and then he's trying to release all these. You guys are slaves to this whole system up here, and it was just crazy. And then all of a sudden, then they all wanted it, and they end up going back to Earth. And you know, it was kind of a wild show. I said, this is the gospel. I mean, I literally would go to a movie theater, and I could kind of talk. This is a parable. It's a modern day parable of the gospel. It really is. It was in a wild way. WALL-E, the gospel of WALL-E, right? You know, these little creatures and these, and this is what happened right here. Something happened, and he's going to describe it. While so engaged as I was journeying to Damascus with the authority and commission of the chief priests, at midday, O king, I saw on the way a light from heaven, brighter than the sun, shining all around me, and those who were journeying with me. And when we had fallen to the ground, I heard a voice saying to me in the Hebrew dialect, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? It is hard for you to kick against the goads. The goads would be these little spike strips that they would keep the oxen in line to, so they didn't get off and when they were plowing fields and things. And I said, who are you, Lord? And the Lord said, I am Jesus. Do you know that's happening in the Middle East right now? People are having dreams all over. I mean, some of our friends at the colleges and things, they're like, no, they're whole villages, 100, 200 people. They'll wake up having had the same dream the night before. Who is this? It's Jesus, right? Powerful. I'm the one who you're persecuting. Get up, stand on your feet. For this purpose I have appeared to you. I want you to get that for a minute. To appoint you a minister and a witness. Can I get a witness, right? Not only to the things which you have seen, but also to the things in which I will appear to you. We're about to go on a journey. And I'm not giving you everything you're going to have. And it was over a decade. Some think 11 years, maybe 14 years. I mean, the difference that Paul was being discipled. So he was now, in this moment, coming out of Egypt and going into the wilderness to be discipled. And then one day, you're going to cross the Jordan, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, and you're going to go on a rescue mission with me. I've appointed you for this purpose, but you're going to have to be trained, and I'm going to appear to you. And he appeared to Paul in some of the most profound ways of which our lives all, if you're a follower of Jesus, and even if you're not, Pauline theology has shaped the Western world, but certainly given us insight into the scriptures, what we'd call the Old Testament or the Tanakh. Now catch this, rescuing you from the Jewish people, not all the Jews, but those religious leaders that were like you, and from the Gentiles, because the Gentiles are going to be after you too, to whom I am sending you, to open their eyes so that they may turn from darkness to light and from the dominion of Satan to God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins. Here's what happens. You want to know what happens? It starts right now. Just a veil is lifted, and you're like, I just saw all this right, this Christianity stuff was just, you had to wear a MAGA hat and you had to be, you know, run on the Capitol. And I thought that's what that was. I thought that's what all that Christianity, no, this is it. The veil comes up and you see the light of Jesus and you fall to the ground. That's how it starts. And then this is the next step, that they're going to receive forgiveness of sins and what? Immediately an inheritance among those who have been sanctified by faith in me. You become part of an inheritance. Think about that for a minute. Now, why was Paul missing this? Why do many Jewish people still miss this today? Because they think they've got he said it himself. I was earnestly serving God night and day. We were from the strictest sect of Judaism. Nobody tried harder than we did to be good enough to garner the support of the Father, Yahweh, bless his name, bless his holy name, Adonai, right? All the Hebrew terms. We serve him like nobody else. The inheritance is ours. And they kill the son. Seems unfair, doesn't it? Until you understand what all the prophets had been seeing. Galatians 3, they thought it was going to be by their good deeds. This is the bottom line. And Jesus was a massive hindrance to that vision. Do you see that? Jesus is a vision disruptor every time when he comes into your life. He is still disrupting. Laura and I had these long conversations. He's still disrupting visions that I've had from the time I was, big. I had a vision of being Scotty Scheffler. I really did. We were driving back and we were driving down Interstate 10, and it just hit me. On one side, in the Beaumont area, and I hope this doesn't sound, because please understand, my golf career was a failure. For 99% of my golf career was a failure, complete abject failure. But we were driving back, going east, and I looked over, and there was what used to be, we owned it, the Southern California PGA owned this golf course. And I actually won the section championship one year. Now, back in that day, that was like a mini tour card. I had friends on tour that couldn't get in the West Coast swing, and that got me in the LA Open and the San Diego Open and the Bob Hope and several Nike events. It was crazy. They don't have that anymore, obviously. But back then, it was like a mini tour card. And then I looked at the other side of the highway, and it's Oak Valley, a place called Oak Valley. And I remember I was like leading or one back in a Q school, which would have gotten me status on the PGA Tour, or at that time would have been the Nike Tour. Today it's called the Corn Ferry Tour. And I remember, and I got up on one hole, was coming down this kind of the stretch, and it was 30 miles an hour wind, as if you've known. That's why they put windmills out there. There's probably a reason why they put windmills out there, because it's blowing. And I hit this shot, and a little bit right, and we thought it was just right of the fairway. Got down there, never could find it, and I panicked, and I hit another ball, and then and I hit it in the bush, and I ended up making a 10. And I'm like, this gave me a platform just enough, and this crushed my platform, right? Because I had wanted to be on tour, and I wasn't good enough, but I thought I was, and I wanted to be on tour. And I see Clayton Cole here is a pro over at Cherry Hills, and I'm sure Clayton, you know, he's some of those aspirations. Well, we're young. We want to be Scotty Scheffler. We don't want to be, you know, we don't want to be caddying. We want to be the guy. We want to be up there and the one that they're interviewing and all that kind of thing. And it just hit me. I said, Laura, I said, I thought God was opening a door, and here he's on this side of the, on the freeway, he closed the door. It was just so weird. And it felt like those were almost the goads. You know, God just keep me in between. It was neither. It was my plans for you. And God does that in your life too. Do you understand that? Until you learn to love a closed door, until you learn to love a closed, some of you right now in the hearing of my voice are having a door that's closed radically in your face. Maybe a relationship you thought was going to be great, or maybe a financial thing you thought was going to explode and it's not, or maybe something and it's a closed door and you're just like, oh God, where are you? Why don't you love me? I follow you and you allowed me to make a 10 at Oak Valley. What kind of God are you, you know? And then over here, you know, it's like, Lord, what is it that you want from me? Why don't you bless me? I've learned to love a closed door. Health-wise, I mean, it's like, you know, it wasn't long ago, they wheeled me up in here in a wheelchair. You remember that? I mean, I thought I would never walk again. Closed door. But God's always with those goads, pushing me back into the lane for which he's called me. And he does that to you too. Some of you are suffering mightily right now, and I want to encourage you. Listen to me. He has a plan. Don't give up on his plan for you, because it doesn't go according to your agenda and the inheritance that you think you're protecting. We still spurn the message of Jesus that comes to us individually. Not, this was collective and world and global. But Jesus has a message for you today. It's our daily bread. And sometimes he's kicking you back with these little spikes, and it hurts to get back on the plan and the pathway that God has for your life. Because we, like sheep, have gone astray, everyone to his own way. That's what sheep do. I mean, I'm so glad that he didn't call us the lion of the tribe of Judah. Each one of you are lion and lionesses and all this, you know, king of the jungle. No, he's the lion. We're the sheep. But we have the lion living in us, and he wants to do lion kind of things in us and through us as he keeps us on the path. Don't kill the message of Jesus, not only in an ultimate way, but in a daily way. Are you with me on this? Please understand. Galatians 3, verse 16. The promises, that's what Paul was talking to Agrippa about, the promises. The promises were spoken to Abraham and to his seed. It does not say into seeds, as referring to many, but rather one, and to your seed, that is Christ. What I am saying is this: the law, which came 430 years later, does not invalidate a covenant previously ratified by God so as to nullify the promise. Now, you say, well, what did he just say? Wait a minute, wake up. I don't understand what he just said. There was a promise made to Abraham, And the law that came later did not invalidate. That promise is still effectual for people who believe in the seed. And this is for if the inheritance again, there it is again, the inheritance. For the inheritance is based, if it's based on law, it's no longer based on a promise. God has granted it to Abraham by means of a promise. In other words, the promise is a function of faith, not of the law. If you think I'll be a good person, this is all going to work out, I'm nicer than the, you know, the other guys I know, I definitely am not the cheat. I don't cheat at Mahjong like these other women cheat on, you know, Saturday mornings. I don't do that. I don't know anything about pickleball, but I heard there's a kitchen. I don't get in somebody else's kitchen. I don't know what all that is. You know, somehow we justify that we're good, we're the good people, and then there's, of course, the bad people. We're the good people on this political party, the bad people on the other side. We're good on this side, whether it's racism, whether it's political divisions, factions. You know the manifestations of the flesh? Dissensions, strife, factions, all that is a manifestation of the flesh thinking that you're going to do it on your own. And you wonder why we have such chaos. Why do you think we had a Saul? I hope you see that. Arabs and Jews and English-speaking people that have now immigrated back to Israel and things, and they're all loving each other and acting like they love each other and singing about Jesus together, that's the only thing that's gonna work. Remember, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is so weak. And our agendas, most of our agendas, are all predicated in the flesh. They were dreamed up in the flesh. And then lastly this morning, we'll pick this up next week, but Galatians 4, catch this. You have to get this. What is Paul arguing? He's talking. They had already gone back to the law. This Galatian region is like, you guys are already going back to the law. Who has bewitched you? You started by the Spirit. Are you going to be perfected in the flesh? Give me a break. This is not about your righteousness, but it is about His righteousness through you. And then to close this morning, so also we, while we were children, verse 3, we're held in bondage under the elemental things of the world. We just did like everybody else. What do you think the world's agenda is? Everybody has a slightly different one, but in the end, there are a lot of people that want to get up and just raise healthy kids. Moms that just want to raise healthy kids. They might not believe in God at all, but they still want to raise healthy kids. You know, fathers want to provide for their families, and people want to, you know, you want what you want. And then Jesus comes in, and He completely upends your agenda. To mean what? That He doesn't care about healthy kids or a good marriage? No, not at all. But He has a different vision for your life than what you had when you came in. That's why one of the primary reasons that Israel missed it is because Jesus came in to disrupt their limited vision of the world. Their limited vision at the time was, we want to get the oppressors off our back. We want God, the Messiah, to kill out Rome. We want to live in peace. It was so limited. They couldn't see that the Messiah was going to come, as all the prophets had seen. And not only, it was going to be way more than that, it was going to be global. In fact, we could even say cosmic. That's why they missed. They wanted the inheritance their way, by the law. And it goes on, it says, when the fullness of time came, now catch this, God sent forth His Son, just like in the parable. Now, who owns the vineyard? This is a big point I want to make this morning. Who owns the vineyard? Well, the vineyard owner in the parable. That makes sense. Who owns the vineyard? The vineyard owner, right? What does Psalm 24 said? The earth is the Lord's and all that it contains. And we're down here, our earth, our planet, my stuff, me, our nation, our this, my block, my house, my... No, you're a renter. In fact, you're a squatter if you're not paying back your worship to the Creator of your soul. You're a squatter is all you are. This is our inheritance. And by the way, He's been gone a long time. Remember? He's been gone a long time. He doesn't see. All the prophets, they don't see anymore. God doesn't see us. Yes, He does. And you're a renter. You have temporary stewardship. But, let's finish this. He sent forth His Son. He didn't send forth His Son to demand the vineyard and keep them as slaves. Born of a woman, born under the law, so that He might what? Why did he send the Son? First for Israel and then to the Gentiles globally. Why? To redeem those who were under the law, thought they could do it on their own. And then lastly, catch this, that we might receive adoption as sons and daughters. Whoa. I thought he was just going to make us pay, you know, our royalties and go back, and we're just going to have to be slaves and rent for the rest of our life. Jesus says, there's going to come to a place, I'm no longer going to call you slaves, I'm going to call you my friend. Because you are sons, God has sent forth the Spirit of His Son into our hearts, and what does it do? It cries out, Abba, Daddy, Father, Daddy, Daddy. Therefore, you are no longer a slave, but a son, and if you are a son and a daughter, then you are an heir through God. And what do heirs get? Inheritance. An inheritance is what it is. The Anglo-Norman French etymology of that word, it just means you're admitted as an heir. You say, well, you know, my parents got nothing. I got nothing. I'm always getting ripped off. I have to make everything for myself, you know, and I see all these people, you know, these lucky groups of people, and they're out on their yachts and this, and they inherit all this money from this, and they do nothing, and and I'm not going to get any kind of inheritance. You know, I just don't come from money, and it seems like I'm getting the raw end of the deal, and I just so despise those people that don't have to work. They just get this inheritance. In Jesus, you become an heir. You're adopted as part of the family. I hope you can get that this morning. So we'll finish this next week, but look, probably won't. But anyway, we'll try to approach this next week. But are you with me? The very thing that they wanted, they lost. It's tragedy. But God said, but in the end of time, I'm going to bring them back to the land, and they're going to start to believe in me. And then they're going to have an impact. Go read Isaiah 18, 19. And then that's going to go forth. And there, you know, people are always looking for the 144,000, 12,000 male virgins from every tribe. I mean, I just, that's symbolism in my view. What's going to happen is we're going to see that global, that there are going to be more Pauls. I wrote a book years ago. There are going to be more new shepherds, Jeremiah 23. More new shepherds that are going to come out, and they're not going to be weighted down. They're going to be humble. Zephaniah 3 says it'll be a humble people. And many of these Israelis who love Jesus, and they're going to have such a profound impact on the world. I could have never imagined that when I wrote that I'd actually be on a board that's hundreds of millions of people, Jews and Arabs and people around the world are seeing this. And they are. They're becoming a new leadership in the church. It's just so powerful, a light to the nations. They're fulfilling the calling that they've had. And it's happening in your lifetime. I don't know if that it gets you excited. And they realize that their inheritance is a future inheritance, and they are adopted as sons and daughters. Man, that is good preaching right there. Because it's true. That's the only reason it's good. It's because it's true. There is hope for you today. So here's how you apply this in your life. Don't kill the message of Jesus. Maybe you're out there watching TV and you said, if we can just free ourselves of these crazy right-wing evangelicals and this message of Jesus, then we can be free. No. By what a man is overcome, as we'll see next week, he is enslaved. Many of you watching are enslaved to sin. If you commit sin, you're a slave of sin. And you can say, I'm free and I'm this. If we could just get this message of Jesus and just crush it and get it out of the way, we'd finally have this utopia. No, you'll have hell on earth. You'll have chaos. You'll have darkness. He's the light of the world. He's the king. You'll be parched. There'll be famine. You won't have any water to drink, spiritually speaking. Don't get rid of the message. Advance the message of Jesus boldly in the world or in the Coachella Valley or in your town or where you live or on your block so that Jesus can be lifted high. Yeah. And one day, guess what? You'll get it all. And I'll make that even more clear next week. Okay? So we're going to close, and I said, can I get a witness? I love this song. We're going to close with this. I just want you to really contemplate. The witnesses, it's all the power of the Spirit. It's not us, it's the power of Jesus. You can't do it by yourself. It's the work of the Spirit in our lives. It's a gracious, merciful act of God. And all we have to do is believe and then follow Him. It's beautiful.